City in the hand wash.
Oh, okay, yeah. So the city has also been criminally negligent in providing hand washing stations to people who live outside. I guess they're on back order right now, which is freaking wild considering they've known for at least the last 10 years that we've been overdue for like a major catastrophic earthquake. So like, where are the hand washing stations? Consider yourself super privileged if you can wash your hands every day, because like, not everybody can do that.
Well, I've been speaking with John and Fern with the Portland People's Outreach Project. Thank you both so much for talking with me.
Thanks, Sam.
Thank you again, everybody, for listening to Totality of Circumstances and for tuning into KBOO. Thanks to Jasmine Moneymaker, P-POP, KATU, the Oregon Historical Society, and everybody out there who is living through this, helping your neighbor and building community. I'm Sam Bowman. Thanks for calling, and see you in 2 weeks.
You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM.
Good evening and welcome to this special edition of Trans Positive. We are doing Trans Positive safe at home because it is COVID-19. And so we are all at our home computers right now recording on Zoom. Good evening and welcome to Trans Positive. My name is Emma and I use she and her pronouns.
My name is Jean Bryant. I'm one of the regular co-hosts and I also use she and her pronouns.
And I'm Nicolette, also one of the regular co-hosts. I use A&M pronouns.
Hi there, I'm Amira. I use she, her.
Great, welcome. How's everybody doing tonight?
As well as I can be with everything that's going on. How about all of you?
I'm anxious and certainly beginning to feel the impacts of the changes. I have been self-isolated at home because I had been some symptomatic. So I'm a little over 3 weeks since I've been pretty much just at home.
And oh, wow.
It's hard to me a little bit, honestly.
Yeah. Unfortunately for me, I can't completely shut myself in because I still have to go out to get like medicine and groceries. You know, I am a chronically ill person, but at the same time, I especially have to be extra careful because I am immunocompromised, so I'm at high risk. But, you know, it's unfortunate that I can't just stay at home all day when I still have to go out and get things that I need.
And we have a very special guest today. We have Amira Stanley with the Can Be Transgender Alliance, and we're going to talk a little bit about the march that they were planning right when COVID-19 started. How are you, Amira?
Good. I have nothing to complain about. I feel great.
Awesome.
Yeah, staying away. My husband is a caregiver. He takes care of dementia individuals. So he's like, stay away from me. So I'm social mm-hmm. distancing from him too. But other than that, doing good. Yeah.
I understand. I'm also a caregiver. I take care of adults with developmental disabilities, and I totally understand what he's telling you.
We did that, yeah. And I respect it, because that's how we met, like, almost 10 years ago. Mm-hmm. We were both doing the same things. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Cool.
Well, Amira, you are our guest tonight, and so we just wanted to start off by tonight's show. We're going to talk first with Amira Stanley with the Can Be Transgender Alliance about all the amazing work that the Can Be Transgender Alliance has done in the last 2 years fighting transphobia down in Can Be with the support of the broader community. And in the second half mm-hmm. of the show, we're going to talk about COVID-19 and how it's affected the queer and non-binary community, including some people that we've lost recently from our community to COVID-19. So Amira, welcome to Trans Positive.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Thanks. Amira, so can you tell us, first of all, what is the Can Be Transgender Alliance?
The Can Be Transgender Alliance is a group of individuals that came together when it was asked for the mayor to do a proclamation for transgender visibility. It was denied. And once that happened, Julie and Nick came together. They're a married couple, and they are either trans or non-binary individuals, and they came together, and there was over like 100, I believe. Please, someone correct me if I'm wrong, feel free. I'm sure someone will. But there was over like 100 members within, I think, the first couple days or something dramatic like that. So basically, we've just been kind of trying to lead with love, even though a lot of really stressful and ignorant and hurtful things are happening. We're really trying to come at it through an angle of love and peace. Because mm-hmm. I feel like, in my opinion, I feel like people that are kind of closed off and not open-minded, I think that they are more open to hear us if we come chill and not angry and intimidating. So we planned what was the first thing we did? I think the first major thing was Pride. The Trans Alliance group was asked to walk in Pride that year. Mm-hmm. And then we did a barbecue at the park. It was a diversity night out, a night of inclusion in Canby. We did that in July. We did that in August. And then July, 4th of July, we had a, we were in the 4th of July parade mm-hmm. in Canby.
Yeah.
So that was a lot of work. All of it was a lot of work, but mm-hmm. we all pulled together. And we go to city council often and speak, and we just recently asked again. It was denied again, so we planned this amazing little march mm-hmm. and we were ready to go, and I was like trying to get the word, hey, is this going to be canceled, do you think? And people were like, no, I don't think so. Yeah. We're just waiting, and it's like, yeah, it was canceled. And once it was canceled, I knew it was serious. Mm-hmm. So I knew the whole virus thing was serious when that was canceled. I was like, okay, all right, I'm going to go ahead and social distance and not get sick. mm-hmm. That's fine with me. Mm-hmm. But I am, you know, a couple of us were a little worried about the momentum. We had such a momentum. I had my church crew behind me. I mean, we had Bro there. They were going to participate. We had so many people behind us. I'm just hoping that when things are able to get back at it, that we have that opportunity to have all mm-hmm. those people come back.
So, Amira, this is Jean.
Yeah.
Hi. So has your group been pretty much exclusively focused on visibility and initiative right in Canby, or do you have any engagements outside of Canby, any other alliances outside of Canby? Is your membership exclusively Canby? What's the scope?
Yeah. So in the beginning, from my knowledge, was just in Canby, but recently it's reaching, because we made a decision as a group that we wanted all hands on deck with this whole March situation. And so I don't want to quote this is why I wish there was another partner with me. I know that there's talks of combining joining with another trans type of group. And I don't want to say the wrong name, But we are looking at that. I don't want to say anything permanent because I'm not 100%. So I apologize. Yeah.
What was the march going to be about, Amira? What were you marching about?
So we're basically marching about the fact that we didn't get the proclamation again, and we were also we also plan to have like a presentation of sorts, and like basically we made our own proclamation, and we wanted to have the march where it was just a couple people maybe speaking and then do like a little peaceful chant and then walk over to city council together, and the people that were going to speak sign up to speak, and we were going to present our own and say like basically if you don't see us, we want to let the transgender people here know that we see them and this is for them. Mm-hmm. So that's the plan, hopefully that's still the plan to do that.
Do you remember about what did the proclamation say? What was it about?
Yeah, it was about basically visibility for trans people, that all people matter, that everybody should be seen.
And the city council didn't want to vote on it or anything?
Well, he basically, at the last city council meeting where we all went, he basically told us no and explained that he had done some research, that a couple of things, basically saying that the complaints that we've been saying and saying that there's disrespect and like violence and all kinds of things, he basically tried to prove that there was no reports of any of that he mm-hmm. that he went to the school board or he went and talked to whoever and that wasn't the case. He brought up the fact that he talked to the police department and there's a gay police officer in Canby and yay.
Gotcha. Yeah.
And the police officers it was all just a bunch of kind of smoky smoke stuff. Is very disappointing. I personally have met with the mayor sometimes and I say it all the time on record. I really like him. I think he's a genuine dude. I think it's a lot of pressure to go against your whole group of people, your circle of influence. It takes a lot of courage to go against, you know, I feel like if he didn't have his circle of influence, I think that he would. I think if they all said, you know what, we've had a change of heart, we think, you know, you should do this, my gut and my heart is telling me that he would do it. I think he's a good dude. I don't want to bash him because I think genuinely he's a nice guy. I think he's just kind of, he's a coward, mm-hmm. unfortunately. Said with love.
Mm-hmm. So the proclamation was basically validating the lives of trans people in Canby.
Yeah, and if I just can note about the youth, I do a lot of volunteer stuff for the Living Room youth, and I ask the kids, because sometimes I do question my own self, like, why am I doing this? Mm-hmm. You know, because there's times where I'm just crying at night because I'm so overwhelmed with the ignorance and like, what is it going to truly hurt you? It's overwhelming. But when I went to the youth the couple days before the city council, I said, do you guys want us to keep fighting for this? And the four youth that were there that are from Canby said, yes, we want you to keep fighting for this, you know? Mm-hmm. And so if nothing else, I'm gonna keep going just to educate and just keep trying to educate them the best way that I can. Mm-hmm. So
great.
That's why I'm in this, mm-hmm. for the kids. They deserve to know that their town, you know, has their back and that mm-hmm. they matter, mm-hmm. you know?
That is absolutely true. So then what I'm wondering is, are you still planning to have the march in the future once it's more safe?
Yeah, we are. We definitely said, let's get back at it. I mean, we had donations and like, I have a bunch of boxes of like granola bars and water bottles in my house now because me and another person were responsible for the donation. So we agreed we're just going to keep it. The cash that I got from, like, I got a couple bucks here and there from people at church, they all said keep it until the next one or whatever, you know. Mm-hmm. So we plan on doing it, even if it's like at the end of the year, we're doing something.
Mm-hmm.
For sure.
Amira, we're both from Clackamas County. Jane and Nicolette are up in Clark County, so I think that we all kind of understand a little bit about what it's like to be transgender or non-binary and to be living kind of out on the outskirts, you know, in parts of Portland where a lot of us, it's the only part of Portland we can afford to live in.
Yes, exactly.
I mean, it's too expensive for you know, people who work part-time making minimum wage to live downtown or in Mississippi or Kenton or Cully, you know, great neighborhoods, Hawthorne. I mean, for a lot of us, we live out here out on the outskirts because it's where there's affordable housing. But it's also challenging, especially for trans and non-binary youth. It's very challenging because they're coming out and they're going to school, oftentimes it's public school, where they may or may not be supported. There might not be a GSA or the school board may not be supportive. So in Canby, part of the reason that the Canby Transgender Alliance was started, wasn't it in response to a school board election, Amira?
Oh, that happened after, I want to say. I don't want to say her name. Wasn't that after? Yeah, I think they were in uproar because she was the main one. She wasn't the main one, but she said some pretty nasty things at the first city council meeting, if I'm thinking of what you're thinking about.
Mm-hmm. So what I remember in Canby is that there was a school board election back in 2019, I think it was. And on the school board, there was a woman who was openly an open transphobe. And she said that she was against programs that support trans and non-binary youth. And that, you know, she was very clear about that. And I believe I believe she won the school board election by 2%, 49% or something. And
Okay. Now I'm curious if it's I didn't know how Canby really was until after I already moved here. But I feel safe here. I get a couple stairs, but I'm kind of used to that. But my husband is kind of privileged because he passes pretty easily. He's not struggling and he's really not into doing this. So part of me is doing all this for him, even though he's like, I'm rooting for you. But he doesn't want to be visible, you know, but he's lucky because he does pass at this point in the game.
Yeah, I think, you know, it's unfortunate that people who don't pass as well as those who do, you know, I think suffer quite a bit more from transphobia, at least out in public. Yes. I mean, I definitely experience transphobia when people know about my gender identity, but because I pass as cis, that, you know, I don't generally have too much trouble in public or around people who don't know me that well.
It's hard. It's hard. That's one thing, you know, I grew up in California, and when I came out, it wasn't all this detail. And so moving here and doing all the volunteer stuff, I'm learning so much. So much to the point where I'm like, do I belong under this umbrella? Because I don't understand half of the stuff sometimes. I'm totally confused. But I'm learning so much from the youth and all of the things that, you know, I do and try to help out with. It's all just learning for me. I'm super grateful that people have allowed me to be in their circles and allow me to ask questions and get to know them. So.
And I think that is the important thing, is to just keep an open mind and be willing to learn. And I think it's okay to ask questions as long as you're respectful. And I'm glad that, you know, people are willing to educate you and help you understand.
Yeah,
it's so important in our community, I think.
Yeah, yeah. And I also try to nudge my husband to be more forgiving too, and not take himself so serious, because if you spend your day barking at everybody that you know, accidentally, if it's on purpose, that's one thing. But I try to remind my husband to just kind of live in the moment and not be so angry about it. You know, it's okay to check people and say, hey, that's disrespectful, but to let it affect your spirit and your soul, I would like to see my partner be happy. And it just doesn't make you happy when you're constantly having to like rah-ar, you know, at people. So that's hard too, because then Yeah,
it is sort of a tricky balance, in that we want to be seen, we want to be visible, and we want people to treat us the way we should be treated. We want people to see us for who we are. We have to not let it affect us too harshly when they're going to be cruel to us. There are people who aren't going to see us the way we are, and we have to learn to be strong and, you know that we know who we are, and that's what matters most.
Right. Yeah, I was a young, really dark skin. I'm not that dark skin really, but back, you know, I was raised in an all white town and those kids made me feel like I was the darkest of the dark. So I know what it's like to have to constantly like defend yourself or like, you know, tell people, hey, you can't say that. That's rude. That's disrespectful. Like, you know, certain things that they don't even realize are disrespect. So I totally get it and I sympathize with it, but I also know how it made me feel to be on the attack mode all the time. And I wasn't a very happy individual. So I just try to nudge that. And I can do that because he's my husband. So,
you know, we had a really good show last week. It was, we replayed this show about friends and family of trans and non-binary folks. And it was part of a series that mm-hmm. we did over a couple of months where we, Jean started it. And Jean interviewed lots of wives and husbands and children and parents. And
nice.
Hearing those stories, I think, is so important.
Very it tells much us, so.
You know, and the story, I mean, the things that you do as someone who loves and supports a transgender person, a lot of times is not mm-hmm. acknowledged. It's not recognized what it's like for
mm-hmm. someone like you. Thank you.
While yeah, we
definitely physically,
it seems like we've spent a lot of time in the last 10 years really honoring and celebrating trans and non-binary lives as we've become more accepted in the mainstream. But in that process, I don't know if we've really mm-hmm. recognized the people who love transgender people and, you know, how important they are.
Yeah, our cis allies are, you know, what help us cement our place in the world, because without them, you know, we wouldn't be able to advance to the point that we are at now, and we wouldn't be able to keep advancing further if we don't have the support from the people who understand us and see us for who we are.
Oh wow, you guys are gonna try to get me to cry. That's sweet. I'm super sweet. Yeah, I'm like, oh, that's sweet. Thank you.
Yeah. You're listening to KBOO Community Radio, 90.7 FM here in Portland. And we're doing a special episode of Trans Positive on Zoom because this is the era of COVID-19, so everyone's staying home and staying safe. And tonight our guest is Amira Stanley from the Can Be Transgender Alliance, talking about a march that was scheduled to begin just about when COVID-19 started. And it was a march recognized the dignity of transgender and non-binary folks in Canby.
Yeah. You guys haven't seen the city council meeting from, I think it was the 4th, maybe?
No.
It was the 4th city council. Because in the beginning, they allow you to speak, right? If you sign a card, mm-hmm. you get chance to speak. And then they do more things in the middle. And then at the end, you have another opportunity to speak. So typically, I usually say what I have to say. I wait for all of our people to speak, and then I leave, usually. And this time, we stayed the entire time. But the things people said were so powerful.
Mm.
I recommend anybody going to look at that day. And even if you just watch the beginning part and then fast forward through and watch the end, phenomenal. The people that we have in our circle are just... I mean, just everybody, Sarah Rodriguez, like, I'm just in awe to be in presence of all these mm-hmm. freaking amazing humans.
Hi, we're back for the second half of Transpositive. This is Transpositive here on KBOO Community Radio. And tonight we are doing a special COVID-19 show. We're all recording at home on Zoom because none of us can come into the station. The station's closed right now. But we want to talk tonight about how COVID-19 is affecting the trans and non-binary community. So my name is Emma, and I use she and her pronouns.
My name is Nicolette, and I use A&M pronouns.
My name is Jean, and I use she and her pronouns.
And my name is Nico. I use they pronouns.
Well, this is Jean. And before we bridge in the second half to talking about the impacts of COVID-19 on us as a community. I thought it was interesting. During our break, I went on to my web browser and it was very easy to type in the Canby, Oregon City Council. The videos and audio of their meetings are posted. It was really quick and easy. So just as a follow-on to and close out for our segment in the first half of the show with Amira, where she was talking about how powerful those testimonials were in that meeting, even though the city council and mayor did not take action on their request. So it'd be good to go on and check out those testimonials.
So how's everybody doing in self-isolation? Let's start with you, Nico, because we haven't heard from you tonight.
Yeah. I have disabilities and have disabilities for about the last 10 years. And so for me, I was already living in sort of semi-isolation already and kind of doing volunteer and working from home a lot. So not too much has changed for me. I used to go swimming and I can't do that anymore. And there, you know, there's other things that I miss from being out in the world. But for the most part, life has not changed a whole lot for me. I'm very lucky to have had care work providers who are continuing to support me. And so I'm doing okay. I think I've already had quite a bit of practice at this, having lived with disabilities for so long. So so I'm used to like having to lay in bed and not have a lot to do. So I feel like it's one of the advantages that I'm really grateful for at this point, that I've already got like a leg up on how to do this whole isolation thing.
And I was talking about earlier how I'm disabled as well, and so I also already couldn't go out a whole lot due to my disabilities, but now it's like there's even less that I'm actually able to do. Like I can't do a lot of my volunteer work or anything like that. I can't even hang out with friends. But you know, I unfortunately cannot stay in my house all the time because I still have to go out to like get my medicine and get groceries, you know. But I'm still trying to at least, you know, like minimize how much I'm going out. And, you know, I try and maybe go out once or twice a week just to get, you know, essentials. It's at least the nice thing about this is now my school, because I'm a college student, they've completely switched to remote learning. So that's actually really great for me, because it's very helpful for me to not have to go out and go down to the campus anyway, with as disabled as I am. So I can just do all my classes online. For me, that's really helpful.
Yeah, I think that that has been one of the nice things that's come with all of this, is that really radical accessibility is now like the standard, which is kind of great.
Yeah.
I really had to fight for these things in the past to be able to work from home or do something like that. And now it's like, oh, everybody has to do it. I will say one of the other advantages that I feel like I've had in all of this, and this is not necessarily about specifically isolation, but I know that it's really frustrating that we can't all get tested, and I think that everybody probably wants to get tested. So I wanted to say this, that what I have learned over the years is that it's incredibly frustrating not to get the test you need to show what you have, to prove what you have. Mm-hmm. And at the same time, unless there is a treatment, a surgery, a vaccine, a medication, or whatever it is, medical providers seem to just treat symptoms at that point. So, you know, them telling everybody just hang out and, you know, stay away from everybody and do what you can to be, you know, self-isolating right now. And if you have a hard time in breathing, that's when you come in, because honestly, going into a medical facility is where you're, if you don't already have it, you might pick it up just by going in to try and get tested. So, I did want to share that little bit of information that it's like, I know that this is horrible, and also like, we'll get through it, and hopefully
I mean, yeah. It is concerning for people like me. You know, I'm immunocompromised, and so it's one of those things that if I do potentially start to show symptoms, I can't wait for it to get any worse. I have to get treated right away, or else, you know, I could die very quickly, honestly.
Yeah, samesies. Yep.
And speaking of chronic illness, I have meds to take right now. Hold on just a second.
Okay. While you're doing that, I would just like to introduce Da Goodman. Da has joined us tonight. Da is with the Can Be Transgender Alliance. And Amira has disappeared. Amira was here just a minute ago, but we had Amira on for the first half of the show. So it's great to have you on now, Da, too. Sorry for the confusion. Da, welcome. Can you tell us, what is the Can Be Transgender Alliance?
Well, we formed in April of 2019 as a response to the needs of the trans community. We asked the mayor to do a proclamation for Trans Day of Visibility. He had handed out proclamation after proclamation, like an average of 5 or 10 per month, never turned down a single one, and then we asked for one, and now he doesn't do proclamations anymore. So we are pretty active online, and it has been difficult and really exciting and challenging to navigate rural advocacy in such an intolerant sort of microclimate of emotion. Sorry, I got a little bit lost here.
That's okay.
But we meet on a regular basis to just have community and know that there are other trans people in the area. That was one thing, sort of myth is that you guys are all up in Portland. Any transgender people down here. And I've been surprised at who's come out of the woodwork and said they need help, they need fellowship, they have resources to share. And so we've done barbecues and potlucks during the summer with concerts in the park. And darn it, I should have had the number, but we provide emergency financial assistance to our members. Say they have rent due and they don't have enough, or if you have utilities shut off, we have had that's been a big part of how we support one another. In addition to a clothing closet that we've put together.
Well, thank you. Am I correct in that the Can Be Transgender Alliance in part started because of the fallout from the school board election? Wasn't there a transphobic school board person elected?
Stephanie Carlson spoke at one of the city council meetings that was related to the Trans Day of Visibility. She was running for school board at the time, and she then withdrew her name from the election pool and didn't do it in time, so she was still on the ballot. And even though she had intended to leave and not take the position, she had the votes. Anyway, she tried to withdraw, didn't do it in time, and now she's on the school board. She's also on the board of Hope 360, which is a pregnancy resource center. It's in Oregon City, and they were a religious organization. So it's not just about the transphobia that is problematic with Stephanie Carlson. It's also, you know, that she's a member of the Phyllis Schlafly Eagle Forum.
Thank you, Da. That was very informative. So, Da, what's the future for the Can Be Transgender Alliance?
Well, we're looking at possibly becoming doing a merger, or becoming a part of the Northwest Gender Alliance, which is an organization that's been around for coming on up on 40 years now. They would really like to help us to grow our community, to be more of a stable presence in the community, and to offer their experience and expertise in terms of community education. And you know, they just have so much stuff. They have a better button maker. than me.
Actually, this is a good time to give a shout out, because today, the day that we're recording this show, is Jackie Stone's birthday. Jackie is the president of the NWGA.
That's right. I think she's
cool. Yay. Happy birthday.
Yeah.
Happy birthday, Jackie.
Happy birthday.
So their organization is wanting some fresh blood, some new energy, and to find new directions that they can go and still be a resource to the community. And so one place where there may be some mutual support, because we're younger in our group, and you know, they're older and more established.
Mm-hmm. But the Northwest Gender Alliance has been around since the 1990s. And there was a time when it was, I mean, for most of its existence, it was the only group out there for trans, queer, non-binary folks. Yeah. And, you know, it's produced some amazing leaders, and it's the connections in the community just run so deep. So I'm really glad that the Canby Transgender Alliance is considering joining them.
It's such a great resource of our local history, our, you know, our trans elders, and I'm looking forward to getting those stories from people and recording them. I'm on the board of the Northwest Gender Alliance also.
And Dot, if people want to find out more about the Canby Transgender Alliance or how to support, how can they find out about you?
Well, there is a Facebook page. It's just under Canby Transgender Alliance, and we have a website, but we had some funding issues, so I'm not sure how much of the website is up anymore.
Okay, but they can find you on Facebook under Canby Transgender Alliance.
Yes, and there's an Instagram, and I believe there's a Twitter also.
Awesome, thanks. So Dot, we're gonna go back to we're gonna finish out the show. We're just talking about how COVID-19 is affecting the trans and non-binary community, and you're welcome to join us for the remainder of the conversation if you'd like, or if you want to go, you're welcome to go.
I'll just surprise you.
Okay. I asked how the isolation is going for you and for you, Jean, and Da, if you feel like
confident. Yeah, I mean, I'm finding it really interesting because you know, I'm separated from all these people that I'm used to seeing. And but at the same time, my own personal life, as you know, Nico, is still pretty busy, because I mean, I still have to work. I'm a caregiver for adults with developmental disabilities, and somebody has to go take care of them even during COVID-19.
Just gonna say the same thing. I am so grateful that in Oregon we have the medical coverage under Medicaid. To make sure that those of us with disabilities and the elders in our communities still have access to people to provide care for us. It's everything, and it's the reason why I haven't had to go out and expose myself over and over and over again. It's just been so helpful. So thank you for continuing to do that work, Emma.
Thanks. How about you, Jean? How are you doing?
Well, today marks 22 days since I went into a self-imposed isolation, and it was because I was experiencing symptoms. I got fairly sick. For that reason, I have not worked since the 10th of March. I also am part of the healthcare chain. I was doing non-emergency medical transport, basically transporting folks in, you know, wheelchairs, driving a wheelchair van, taking people to medical appointments and stuff. Fairly high-risk community. And so I self-isolated because I was ill and I didn't want to put passengers at risk. I'm over my symptoms. But now still electing to stay home. I think I've been out of my house six times now in 22 days. And only two of those outings involved going to the grocery store for supplies. Everything else has been, you know, like stuff where I didn't even have to get out of my car, pretty much.
you know, like the drive up window at the bank, or to, you know, go put stuff in the mailbox, things like that. So it's starting to wear on me, I'll be honest. I've been doing okay, but it's starting to wear on me. Getting a little bit of cabin fever.
Yeah.
Been listening to a lot of audiobooks and philosophy lectures on YouTube, and trying to, you know, be productive around the house, trying to stay busy, but it's starting to get to me.
Yeah, and I, you know, I understand that very well. I mean, I know that I've got plenty of things to keep me busy, especially since I'm a college student, but at the same time, you know, I want to be able to go out and do all the things that I was doing before. You know, the very, very sad thing is this is all happening when my birthday is this month. So I'm like, oh, I'm probably not even going to be able to go out for my birthday. I'm really sad now.
Well, of course, this has really been devastating to our community too. Just this week, we lost someone really important in the community. Lorena Borjas was a pioneering transgender Latina activist from New York City.
Yes.
And she died of COVID.
Yeah.
It says here that the LGBT community in New York City is mourning the death of transgender activist Lorena Borjas, a Mexican immigrant who pioneered and fought for the rights of the transgender community for over 40 years.
I think one of the things that, I'm a white passing person of color, and I want to say that we are so often dismissed and blown off, or, you know, seen as that, you know, we're not worth the investment of the resources to help someone. And so it's been really hard to watch so many vulnerable people falling through the cracks and not really knowing, you know, as a person that's, you know, an extra vulnerable person right now, knowing that there's not a whole lot that I can do except for trying to text my friends and messaging with them and calling them on the phone and just trying to connect with people, knowing that I don't have money to send, I can't go pick up groceries, you know, there's just so much I can't do. So just trying to be supportive where I can be, and just I think that's one of the things that is really weighing on me right now, is that it's just like I feel kind of helpless, that I can't really help very much, and I really like to help.
How about you, Da? How's it going down in Clackamas County, where we all live?
Well, I mean, one of the big changes was when I did go to the food bank. It's just a drive up. And if you have, I have food allergies that are really serious. So not being able to like pick out and let people know, hey, this is what I need, that's what I need. I have a lot of stuff that I can't use, and I'm handing it out. So there's like minor inconveniences there. But I think what Nico was saying is really, it resonates with me, not internalizing a sense of uselessness, because I can't drive because I have epilepsy, and I'm on disability, and so, you know, wondering how I can still be of service when it used to be my feet and my bike getting me to people and face-to-face interactions, and we can't do that now. So just shifting it into a different forum, it's tough. Plus I have teenagers.
Oh, I just wanted to say that I love that when you unmuted, because earlier I was wondering what that sound was, and it's like frogs and crickets and stuff out in Canby. I love that. Thank you.
I love
what a great sound.
You're listening to 90.7 FM KBOO Community Radio. We are doing a safe at home recording of Transpositive over Zoom. You're listening to Jean, Emma, Nico, Da, Nicolette, and earlier we had on Amira talking with the Canby Transgender Alliance. And also we're talking right now about how COVID-19 is affecting us as members of the trans and non-binary community. So we have about five or six minutes left in the show. Are there any points that people would really like to get to that we haven't gotten to yet tonight?
Yeah, I know Nicolette had some items.
Yes, I'm going to try and get through this as quick as I can because I have some trans-specific COVID-19 related information to share.
Sure, Nicole, we've got 8 minutes.
Okay, all right, I'll make this quick. So first of all, the Transgender Legal Defense and Education Fund recently prepared a free online guide for trans and non-binary individuals attempting to navigate life during the coronavirus pandemic. It's called the Know Your Rights Guide for Transgender People Navigating COVID-19. So hopefully if you Google that, you should be able to find it. It explains both trans-specific concerns and equity concerns that disproportionately impact trans and non-binary individuals, such as issues involving employment, housing, and healthcare. It also features a national appendix of health and advocacy resources. So again, that's the Transgender Legal Defense and Education Fund, a Know Your Rights Guide for Transgender People Navigating COVID-19. Also, BuzzFeed News is offering a survey to find out how trans and non-binary people are being affected by the coronavirus, because I know a lot of us are having concerns about getting health care and things like that in this time. So if you want to take part in that survey, you can Google BuzzFeed News Trans Non-Binary Coronavirus Survey, and you should be able to find it. Also, I wanted to share some information I found about chest binding during COVID-19, because trans and non-binary people who bind their chest are at much higher risk for complications from COVID-19, especially if you have asthma or any other respiratory illness. So the tips I found were, if you have a cough, the medical recommendation is to avoid binding as it can lead to a buildup of fluid in the lungs. And pneumonia is a complication associated with COVID-19, and respiratory illness can be exacerbated by chest constriction. It is recommended to avoid binding if you're sick, but if this does not feel possible for you, consider if you have worn-in binders that could be worn sparingly, or tight singlets or shirts to wear under clothes. Once you take your binder off, be sure to cough. This helps to loosen up your upper body, expand your lungs to their full capacity, and stretches the muscles between your ribs. Coughing can increase musculoskeletal soreness. When you cough repeatedly under compression, your muscles can become tight and sore. So remember to stretch your upper body frequently to reduce the risk of straining your back and neck or cracking a rib. If you have been coughing for a while, your muscles may be tired and injury can be more likely. If you need to have a big cough, try to keep your spine straight and face forward to minimize injury. Avoid twisting as you could cause injury. When possible, give yourself a total break from your binder. If you have to be out in the world, consider finding a bathroom stall where you can take your binder off and do some deep breathing. Seeking medical support for symptomatic cases of COVID-19 is incredibly important. You may need to attend a mainstream health service if you become unwell. If you have to attend a mainstream service, consider going with a friend or support person if possible. Call your local coronavirus helpline to ask if you need to get tested. Ask what testing involves. So to recap, remember to cease or be sparing with binding if unwell, stretch and face forward while coughing, remember deep breathing exercises, and keep up to date with your local health department, CDC, and World Health Organization COVID-19 response guidelines. To give a quick credit, this resource was created by Jack Metcalf, Bachelor of Sports Science, Exercise, and Health. Jack is trans and has worked in trans and gender diverse policy and program development, and also Amelia Arnold, Bachelor of Biomedical Science and Psychology. Amelia is a cisgender queer woman and works training mainstream healthcare workers in LGBTQ+ inclusive practice.
Thank you. Thanks, Nicole. Nice.
That was great.
So
I also I did want to let people know, if they don't already, that if your work status has changed, you might qualify for the Oregon Health Plan, which has really great coverage. So please consider reapplying for the Oregon Health Plan. It is open all of the time. Your unemployment status, if you're getting unemployment because you've been laid off or fired, will not count against you, and neither will the stimulus package that's coming from the federal government. So if you are have changed status, please try and get the Oregon Health Plan. It's opened up to a lot more people. And you, oh, the other thing is, you don't have to have proof of income. Usually they make you send in pay stubs, and it's a nightmare for independent workers. They are skipping all of that stuff right now. So please apply for the Oregon Health Plan if you need it.
All right.
Thank you so much, Nico. So again, my name is Emma. I use she and her pronouns.
My name is Nicolette. I use A&M pronouns.
And this is Nico. I use they pronouns.
And I'm Dog Goodman Griner. I use they, them, and he, him pronouns.
Great. Thank you so much, everyone, for joining us tonight for Transpositive. Stay tuned next week for Preference with Ellen Silver, and we'll be back in 2 weeks. Thank you so much, everyone, and have a good night.
Stay well.
Good night.
Be well, everyone. Be safe.
Stay safe.
Hi, this is Emma. I would like to end Transpositive this week by remembering Latina activist Lorena Borjas and reading her obituary that was published in the New York Times this week. Lorena Borjas, transgender immigrant activist, dies at 59. She helped transgender women in Queens contend with human trafficking, health issues, and possible deportation. Her death was attributed to the coronavirus. And this was written by Daniel Slotnick of the New York Times. This obituary is part of a series about people who have died in the coronavirus pandemic. When transgender women in Queens needed a safe place to be tested for HIV, Lorena Borjas turned her home into a clinic. When others were arrested and charged with prostitution, she bailed them out. When some faced deportation after an arrest, she created a nonprofit group to arrange for their legal representation. Miss Borjas, an indefatigable activist who drew on her own experiences as an immigrant transgender woman to help others, died at a Brooklyn hospital. She was 59. Chase Strangio, a friend and colleague, said the cause was complications of coronavirus. Miss Borjas became a guardian for the transgender community in Queens, helping women deal with sex trafficking, police abuse, substance abuse, and health problems. Cecilia Gentili, a friend, said in a phone interview that Ms. Borjas' efforts on behalf of other transgender women went beyond those of most nonprofit workers. If one of the girls got arrested for doing sex work, she would answer the phone at 3 a.m, and at 6 a.m, she would be in court with a lawyer, with the money to bail you out, Ms. Gentili said. Ms. Borjas' efforts ranged from the broad-focused, like starting nonprofits and organizing protests, to the very personal. Miss Gentili said she handed out condoms to sex workers on Roosevelt Avenue in Queens. She added that Miss Borjas was interested in breaking the arrest, jail, deportation cycle. In 2011, Miss Borjas and Mr. Strangio founded the Lorena Borjas Community Fund to help transgender people embroiled in that cycle. Mr. Strangio said the organization had put up bail for more than 50 people over the years and raised more than $45,000 to cover the costs. But this is just a fraction of what Lorena herself did, Mr. Strangio wrote in an email. She probably helped over 100 transgender people obtain immigration status or other legal support. Born in Mexico City on May 29, 1960, Miss Borjas came to the United States when she was 20 and eventually earned a green card through an amnesty program under the Reagan administration. She was convicted of several charges related to prostitution, which were later vacated by the Queens Criminal Court because the judge said she was forced into prostitution by human traffickers. But other convictions remained on her record until Governor Cuomo pardoned her in 2017. With this pardon granted, I will no longer have to go to sleep at night worrying that I will be deported back to a country that is no longer home, Ms. Borjas told the Transgender Law Center that year. I will be able to live my life without stress and fear of immigration, and I will be able to continue doing the work I do and help more vulnerable transgender women. Ms. Borjas became a U.S. citizen last year. Ms. Gentile said that Ms. Borjas survivors include a partner and family in Mexico and California. And this is just one of the many lives that have been lost due to the coronavirus epidemic, the coronavirus pandemic. We just wanted to take a minute at the end of this show this week to acknowledge and honor those lives of all of those transgender, non-binary, and queer people who have been lost in New York City, in Lombardy, in Paris, in London, in Wuhan, and around the world, who are dying because of this epidemic. They're dying because of a lack of inadequate health care. They're dying because of failed government policies. They're dying because they were the most vulnerable, the people who are out on the front lines every day, working, trying to support themselves, struggling to stay alive, brought down by this virus, which has killed so many. Please remember them in your thoughts, as we will in ours. Thank you so much, and have a good night. We'll see you in 2 weeks. This is Emma Lugo with Trans Positive PDX here on KBOO Community Radio in Portland, Oregon. Thank you so much, and have a good night. Stay safe and stay home. Good evening.
Destination set. Planning route. Two. Hackney Downs Station. Hackney. London. destinations at. Planning route. Two. Hackney Down Station. Hackney. London.
You are listening to KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM and KBOO.FM online.
You are listening to KBOO Community Radio. This is an encore presentation of Calculated Conversation. Enjoy.